You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Stars fans, it's Jeff Kay, public address announcer for your Dallas Stars, and you're listening to Starcastic Remarks, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Go Stars!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Starcastic Remarks. Thomas Harley pulls us away from a utter collapse in the late third period as the Stars defeat the New Jersey Devils 4-3 and shocking into the game tonight here. Thanks to DraftKings. Use that promo code THPN. Next time you're there, you'll get some free goodies. I'm here with James and Ryan. Pretty boring ending to that game, huh, guys?
Just a little bit. I the first thing that came out of my mouth when I was after Thomas Harley scored the goal, I was just like, well, that was kind of a weird game, wasn't it? it was weird from left to right. But the other thing I kept talking to somebody in the press box about was, wouldn't you love to see a 7-game series between these two teams? Like, I know Pete DeBoer absolutely hated the way the Stars played tonight, but from a fan perspective and from an entertainment perspective, I want more games like that. Give me a 7-game series with the New Jersey Devils. I want to see it.
Yeah, it's really... This game is even funnier when you talk about how the last game went for the Stars. I mean, they scored 4-for-4 on the power play, and tonight they get scored on twice on the penalty kill, and then another 1-6-on-5 from a delayed call. So it's really weird how it can flip that quickly.
Yeah, it was really backwards, and it's another one of those games. It's like the first two when we first came back from the break. It was like, didn't love how we played it, but we were winning, and it looked like in the middle of the third period that we were gonna kind of slowly and rather unexcitedly just tick the time off the clock, and that's not how it happened. But I give a lot of credit to the team for not panicking, and then it's even more credit to Thomas Harley to find a way to snipe that one home. And I mean, what an incredible individual effort there.
It really is, and he continues to be one of the Stars' best players. And on top of that, I think he's finally starting to, and we've said it for the last couple of weeks, he's finally starting to get the recognition that he deserves, right? He was this good to begin with. Like, he truly was. It's just he's just getting noticed more, I think.
No, and you're wrong. He wasn't this good to begin with. He has 6 points in the last 3 games.
Okay, but what I'm saying is he's always been this good. He's always been this good. He's always had that confidence. It's just with Miro going down, now he has jumped into the spotlight. And when Miro wasn't scoring in certain places and areas of the Stars game, he is doing it. So he deserves all the accolades that he's getting right now and more.
Real quick, we're going to cut y'all off because we got a $10 super chat from Ryan Gardner. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that. And he's just excited. He said, we're hype, we're good, and we're coming for that chip. So, yeah, I agree. This is definitely one of those hype games. After Harley scored the goal, I let out probably the loudest immediate yell I've let out all season. And my wife had to scold me because we are in an apartment complex, and that goal went in around 10 p.m. So I 100% agree with that sentiment there.
Well, let's just say that a lot of the more biased members of the Stars media were also very excited as well. And yes, I'm talking about myself for the most part, but there were others up there that were like, yes, yes, yeah. Very quietly. So
it was one of those last second wins, like last year against the Predators when they scored 2 in the last like 13 seconds of the game to take it from them. It's just that type of excitement that's just, it's out of nowhere and it punches you in the face.
And real quick, Chris, before I know you want to jump on something else real quick, but this was something else that was pointed out to me by somebody else up in media row. You know, earlier in the season, the first half of the season, this is probably a game the Stars lose, right?
Yeah. And one goal series games.
Exactly. And that's a huge point. Yes, of course, you don't want to lose a 2-goal lead. And yeah, Wyatt Johnson was talking about, yeah, it was great to go up 3-1. It would have been nice to go up 4-1 because we needed the extra goals. But the thing is you got clutch moments at clutch times, not just in the goal department, but also in the save department, too.
Yeah. And the Texas Stars had a game similar to this. And I talked to Neil Graham after that one. They had allowed only one goal all game and they gave up 2 6-on-5. And tonight the Stars give up no 5-on-5 goals, really solid defensively, 5-on-5 all game long. And like, yeah, it sucks that you gave up that third period, but the defense was solid and your team stepped up when they needed to. So overall, I mean, you just got to take positives away from this for me.
Yeah, it's really just a tough night for the penalty kill in general.
Right.
But you know what? When you're first in the NHL, you're allowed to have an off night every once in a while. Okay?
And that's the exact next thing I was going to mention. It's like, should we be worried about the penalty kill? I think the answer is no. Like you said, Ryan, the tops in the league, they played a really good power play tonight that really needed power play goals, and they got all of them. Every time they had the man, an extra guy on the ice, they scored. So this is not something you really think about long term, in my opinion.
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah. Just to jump back on Harley again real quick, since we got sidetracked by an amazingly generous Ryan. He again finishes the night with 25 minutes time on ice. He's insane on that metric. And in his post-game interview on ESPN Plus, the first thing he says is, "I'm tired." So he is definitely getting worn down by this. Pretty much every time he has an interview, he's mentioning that he's exhausted. I mean, and he's still able to do crazy things in the last moments of the game. So he doesn't look tired. At least he didn't on that play.
You could see how tired he was at the end of the game too. He just looked relieved, if that makes any sense. You know, American Airlines Center is going nuts. I'm secretly pumping my fist underneath the desk in the press box.
Not so secretly.
Yeah, maybe not so secretly. But it was very obvious to see that he was extremely, extremely tired. And, you know, I know he says that, but he doesn't look like it. He's had some of his games where he's played a lot, like 3 and 4 nights or whatever, and he plays 27 minutes in that third game or whatever, and it's very obvious. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any like blatant turnovers by him or any blatant bad defensive plays. There were a couple of miscues or whatever, but man, he looks so good.
Yeah, I think the 6-on-5, he might have got a little bit lost, but I think everyone on the ice was a little bit lost on that 6-on-5 goal that the Devils scored too. So we'll bring him another comment here. Nate said, he told us and we should have locked him up long term. I will admit you are 100% correct and I was 100% wrong on that one, Nate. I still wanted him to prove it a little bit more, but man, he's about to get paid in a couple of years.
Should we talk about the other thing?
What?
Wyatt Johnson?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to get to the top three players, Wyatt Johnson, Roope Hintz, and Jason Robertson tonight, all produced massively.
Yeah, that's how you won the game. That's really how you kind of stole away. It felt like, especially for the third period, most players kind of were coasting, and they kind of just snuck out the rest of the way.
That is one thing Pete DeBoer mentioned in the post game. He said that he really liked the first period and thought they could have been up like 3-0 or something like that. And in the second period, that was kind of back and forth, and New Jersey started to push a little bit. And then he said that he thought that the D pairings were actually very good tonight. And what he didn't like was the fact that he didn't say didn't like, but I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but right. He wanted to see the lines get a little bit more forecheck done in the offensive zone in the third period. And I mean, other than the power play that they had, which they had some chances on, and then literally the last 30 seconds of the game, the Stars barely spent any time in the New Jersey zone in the third period. So there's a lot of truth to what he said there, in my personal opinion, because the first period was their best period.
Yep, for sure. 100% agree. That's how it went. And I think the Harley goal was like one of like two Star shots in the last 10 minutes of the game. So they were fully knocked out of it. And to, again, I think that's just another testament to how poised those guys are. I mean, they're all the momentum's against them, and they still find a way to make the one play when it really counts. The point on the defensive pairs is 100% correct. Money Puck has the pairs pretty much staying together the whole time. I mean, it has Lindell CC at 1603, Harley Labushkin at 1430, Bishel Dumba at 1052, and then the next highest 5-on-5 time pair is 150 with Harley Lindell, likely at the end of the game, or at least in when we were trying to hold on to the lead there. So I agree that the D pairs looked really good 5-on-5 tonight, and they didn't get scored on. They only got scored on when they had were a man short.
And that's pretty much the story of the game here tonight. One of the storylines that I pulled out of NHL.com was the Stars penalty kill versus the New Jersey Devils power play. I mean, the New Jersey Devils power play was fifth in the NHL. Obviously, I earlier said that the Stars were first. I would say that the Stars lost the special teams battle here tonight for the most part. They got the key goals when they needed them, especially at the end of the game. That's not really a special teams goal, but it is a critical. It's a critical goal, and it's a clutch goal. But they did get a 5-on-3 power play goal, which I cannot believe I'm saying this. That was their first 5-on-3 power play goal of the season.
They did it.
Well, how many chances have they got? Three?
Yeah. Well,
not a lot, but I mean, normally the chances that we have had been extended like that, and they hadn't scored.
True.
And did you see, do y'all know what the Zuboff rule is?
Yeah, it's over 45 seconds, you better score.
And they didn't even need 20. Right. Tonight,
it
at
was,
least.
I feel like it was really important to score that one before the intermission, because if you don't, then you're thinking about it the whole intermission. Like, we have to score on this.
Honestly, I think 5-on-3, it's important to score as quickly as possible, because you shouldn't be trying to wait around and wait for that perfect pass. It's, you have more space, get it interior and get a grade A chance. And if it doesn't work, do it again. I mean, that's exactly what I want them to do. Like, don't waste time. Get it to the middle of the ice as soon as you can.
So can I actually ask you a question, Chris?
No,
but fine. I'm going to ask it anyways. You know, there were points in the game here today that I felt like they were being a little bit too cute, a little bit too cheeky, if I want to use a razorism, at points. But when you think about the last couple of goals that they've scored on the power play, a lot of them have been like tic-tac-toe kind of plays, some really pretty passing plays, looking for that really good and perfect pass. What's y'all's thoughts on that? Because I'm just curious what you think.
I agree that they're being kind of cute, but they're scoring 4 goals a game right now. So,
and that's what I'm saying, right?
Eventually, they're going to have to flip back and go back to getting it towards the front of the net. But right now, everything's working and it's going in, so why not?
And there's a couple of weird strategic things that are happening that's kind of causing that too. So first, it's Duchesne getting swapped in for Ben. Duchesne's a flashier player. He's looking to make those nicer dishes. He's not the guy that's going to ram home a goal from the top of the crease very often. He'll do it if he has to, and I have no doubt in him for that. But he's going to want to try and make those pretty passes. The other thing is that the Stars are still lining up kind of in a 1-3-1. But they're abandoning it really quickly in favor of more of a spread style power play. And that forces you to make some quote unquote cutesier passes, because you have one less guy in prime scoring location. You only got one guy in the slot. You're going to have to make a better pass through the crease or on a backdoor pass or something to create a high quality opportunity. So I think it's working. It's not structured at all, because like I said, they're starting in their structure and then they just abandon it immediately. And maybe that's the plan, or maybe it's spot, I mean, and the coach is saying, screw it, y'all just do whatever.
It's a perfect plan though, with how many good players you have on the ice. I mean, agreed. there's not like one player on the first power play unit who is so much better at the game than anyone else on the ice. They're all incredible and very good at shooting. So just play pond hockey, I guess.
And that's very an important strategic thing too, because a lot of teams are looking for that one guy. I mean, obviously the one you think of is Ovi, but there's other other teams that try and find a guy too. They try and find McDavid, try and find Line A. I mean, that's the strategy of these teams. The Stars don't have any guy, like you said, James. So it should be more fluid. And I wanted them to do a spread when they were in the slump that they were in. They never fully committed to doing the spread. They still haven't, I don't think, but it's kind of gotten there one way or another, but it's working. I like it. I like seeing those passes, especially with Duchesne on that top pair.
What I'm really seeing a lot of, and I can't believe I'm saying this also for the second time in this episode, but the way that they are moving the puck right now, their puck movement, it reminds me a lot of what Colorado does. And Colorado is so, so effective on the power play. And they've had one of the best power plays for a long time, obviously because of guys like McKinnon and Rantanen and Makar. And the other thing is they're using that puck movement to get the defense, the penalty killing out of sorts and get out of their defensive structure. And then when it looks like they're going to make and strike, when they're going to make that shot, they wait. They hold onto the puck. They let it develop for a split second longer. They make one more pass, and then it's in the back of the net. And I feel like that's something that we're seeing a whole lot more, is the effective, creative passing movement is what's making the Stars' power play so, so lethal right now.
Hey, guys, it's Ryan here. It might not feel like it, but spring's right around the corner. Know how you can tell? Golfers are hitting the links, and we have some tournaments to be talking about. And if you want to do more than just talk, put your money where your mouth is. Get in on all of the tee to green action with DraftKings Sportsbook. From Thursday's opening round through the closing round Sunday, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with tournament props, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. And if you've never bet on golf before, it's easier than you think. Just pick something simple like a golfer to win the tourney and make your pick. It's just that easy. For example, when you look at the Masters coming up here in a little less than 2 months now, Scottie Scheffler is the winner right now, according to DraftKings Sportsbook odds, with a plus 350. Or you could go with Rory McIlroy at a plus 750. Here's something special for first-timers as well. If you do go and bet for one of these two guys, new DraftKings customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casinos and Resort, Kansas. 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. New customers only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio.
Smooth transition. Stengiven was pulled from the top line after the first period. Kind of a quick experiment there, a couple games, and he had one great game where it worked out. But like James said, you got to take that, you got to continue it. And he kind of hasn't the past two games. What'd y'all see from that top line when Stengiven was on it? And do you think he deserved to be pulled from it?
Yeah, I think he kind of had a pretty bad night, at least offensively. He's always fine defensively. He actually had strong three games together where he got at least a point, so that's good. I feel like there's just so much. You can gain so much by just flipping Bork up there, because Bork is so good up on that top line too. We've seen him work there. Mm-hmm. So if you're just going to play whoever's hot at the time and just keep flipping them back and forth from the fourth line to the first line, which you can do because they're such good players, I mean, go for it, right?
For me, honestly, Chris, what I saw was, and I honestly didn't see it in the first period, but it wasn't even that Stankoven was playing bad offensively. It was just some of the defensive miscues. And when you are on the top line like that and you're having some defensive miscues, that means your best players on your team are spending their time in the wrong end of the ice. And it wasn't just once or twice. It was about three or four different times when Stankoven probably should have had it out, and it led to an extended zone shift time in the first period. So I actually didn't see it at first until Bruce Levine tweeted it, and I was just like, really? I didn't see that at all. And then I went back and looked at some of the extended zone time in our own zone, and I was just like, you know what? Yeah, that's true. And then, honestly, I thought Bork was really good on that top line when he got switched up to the second line. It was a little bit of Stankoven being demoted, but also Bork being elevated because of his play. And specifically, there were about two or three times in the second period where I noticed him, and I was just like, that puck is in the offensive zone because of the forecheck of Maverick Bork. So his forecheck is what is getting him on that top line. And it's the same for Stankoven. When he is forechecking really well, that's why he's on the top line. So whoever is on that top line, they just need somebody who can go in and dig the puck out. And both of those guys, Bork and Stankoven, both can do it. It just depends on the game, I guess, when one is better than the other.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on the defensive side. If you believe in the advanced analytics, it's showing the Robertson Stankoven Hintz line at 5-on-5 with about 5.5 minutes time on ice, having the highest expected goals against at 4.06. Interesting enough, though, is that Robertson Bork Hintz with 5.14 time on ice had the second highest with 3.96 expected goals against. So overall, it seemed like 5-on-5, the top line was having trouble in their own end, no matter who was up there.
So yeah, I think some of that's just due to rookie inconsistency. It's just kind of night to night basis. And normally you don't see that from both of them at the same time. So it's kind of a weird one, but it's also that's probably the line that's going up against the other team's top line as well.
And that's the one thing that I'm more worried about too, is both Bork and Stankoven are smaller guys, and the Stars typically are playing a man-on-man defense when they're in their own zone. So the top lines, I think, are sometimes a little bit smarter and are able to pair up a little bit bigger guy against Stankoven and Bork and get them down to the net. And then you have Bork or Stankoven trying to outmuscle a guy in front of Casey DeSmith, and that's a recipe for failure. So I'm worried about just flat out size being a problem defensively for both Bork and Stankoven.
It's not as big a deal for Bork as it is for Logan. And it's not fair, but that's not something that he can control. But I don't know whether it's his motor or what he calls his motor, his ability to play against guys that are a foot taller than him and win the puck. That's something that's been lacking at points in the season. And that's not a shot at him at all. That's just what has happened, and that's just the truth.
I think some of that is people now know how Logan Stankoven is going to play. They know he's smaller, but they're not getting surprised by him anymore. Right. So some of that's going to have to be an adaptation that he makes. He's going to have to be even more.
Yeah, relentless. How much more can he go?
Yeah. But he's going to have to find different ways to win battles like that, too. I mean, it's just going to be an ever-evolving battle for him, just being by virtue of being a smaller player in the NHL.
Couple of final storylines to finish it off. Casey DeSmith had a great game. I mean, it seems that he's either could be a starting goaltender or is not even giving us a chance to win. And tonight he definitely looked like he could be a starting goaltender.
I think he is arguably the biggest star in the game tonight. And I know there's Wyatt Johnson. I know Roope has like 12 points in the last three games or something like that. That's ridiculous. Yeah. But he made key save after key save after key save in every single period, whether it was in the first period when the Devils had their few counterpunches, when it was in the second, when the Devils were starting to get their momentum going, or whether it was in the third when he was just getting shelled. So he, for me, and I'm jumping the gun a little bit, he is the biggest winner for me tonight. But I can't believe we got 24 minutes into the episode, and this is the first time we're talking about him. But like, he is the reason the Stars went tonight. He is the reason the Stars went tonight.
Yeah, I agree. The big saves when the Devils had the most momentum, and they weren't only big saves. They were also momentum stealing themselves. I mean, after those saves, the Stars really started going the other direction too. So 100% agree. He was Captain Clutch tonight for sure. I mean, well, no, he's not Captain Clutch. He's assistant Captain Clutch because of Harley.
But yeah, and you said the key word there, Chris, was clutch. That those kind of saves, and I'm not trying to get beyond him, but Kari Lehtinen, Antti Niemi, that era,
we were not getting out of your mouth, bro.
I know. We were not getting saves out of those $11 million when those two guys were around here. Towards the end, Kari Lehtinen, yes. Beginning and middle, yes. But at the end, not so much. And it is so – and I'm not joking when I say this. I think this was probably Casey DeSmith's best game of the season. I would go that high to say that based off of the amount of chances that he had. The only other game I can think of that might eclipse it is obviously his shutout against the Utah Hockey Club. I think this was his best game.
First game was pretty fantastic too. But yeah, I agree. This was definitely one of his best. I put it up there.
Yeah, and I felt like the Stars did a good job for the most part tonight limiting rebounds off of him, which is typically where you see backups kind of struggle the most is rebound control. And I thought the Stars did a really good job of tying people up once the shot got there. And it gave DeSmith enough time to either cover it or there was a second Dallas Star following up and picking up the rebound too.
Right. And I think he did do a little bit better rebound control too. Not so much holding them, but like kicking out harder, punching harder. I think he was doing a lot better.
Yeah.
So Ryan already gave his biggest winner, Casey DeSmith. I'll go ahead and give mine and roll it into the last storyline I had. Ilya Lyubushkin.
Oh, you muted. I'll go ahead and say it for you, Chris. Ilya Lyubushkin was absolutely that was so cool. His first goal in 146 games, and that's how he does it. I had to look a second, I thought that was Harley. I was like, wait, what? Who is this? A Bush non-bomb? It wasn't even a slap shot, like his classic shot. It was a wrister sniper off the rush, 2-on-1, keeps it himself.
Looks off.
And we talked to him after the game, and I think it was Mike who asked him, were you looking for the pass or were you shooting it the whole way? He was just like, no, I was shooting it the whole way. In his Russian accent. It was so awesome. It was awesome. It made everybody laugh in the media group. But, dude, like, they were so hyped for him. Like, all of his teammates, all the coaches, it was really cool to see. And for everything that he does, and as good a season as he's had, that's awesome. That's so awesome to see. And that was a big turning point in the game, too. Gives your team a 2-goal lead when it looked like it was going to be 1-0 for the entire game.
Yep, that's what I was going to say. And yeah, he looked off, what, Jason Robertson to make that shot?
Maverick Bork.
Oh, just Maverick Bork. That's fine.
Just Maverick Bork. You know? Yeah. 7 goals since January 1st, I think. He's like second in rookie goal scoring since then. So, yeah, no. Not a guy that you normally would not pass the puck off to. But
it's only his fifth goal of his entire career.
That's nuts, man. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
James' biggest winner.
I'm going to give mine to Wyatt Johnson. I felt like he really kind of dominated on the night, especially 5-on-5. He was a monster. The first goal is him just reading the playbook, completely stealing it, and then just outskating everyone down the ice and tucking it up top. So that started the Stars off on the right foot, and they held that for most of the game until the third period, I'd say. He started off great, and he played a ton too. He had the most time on ice among forwards, 1841. That is a ton for a forward on Pete DeBoer's team.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to go ahead and do my biggest winner. It's going to be Dougie Hamilton. He played 5 minutes and was a -1. You played 5 minutes and you got scored on. That's some Jim. That's some Lundqvist stuff right there.
Oh, I had to do him dirty like that.
I had to do him a little bit dirty.
He can't even defend himself anymore.
Yeah, I know.
I know. That's not. And he's had a good season too. Yeah.
You know, I take that one back. I take it back.
Yes. Okay. As you should. There's a lot of other stuff we can mention, and we're gonna save it for tomorrow night, obviously, Chris. But can we go ahead and at least mention the P.S. Suter rumors?
Yeah, if you want to skip your Biggest Loser, that's fine. I was gonna Columbo it, but that's okay.
Okay, all right, go ahead, do your Biggest Loser first. Sorry,
I already did. That's what I just said. James, who's your Biggest Loser?
My Biggest Loser is the PK and special teams in general. I mean, yep. They got killed specifically on the penalty kill. I felt the Devils did a good job of being patient once they got into dangerous spots, especially on their first power play. They got the puck in the slot, and he just waited a half second. It threw Hintz off. He collapsed on it and left the dude wide open on the far side. And they did it quickly, too. That was, like, almost off the faceoff. Broke up the structure instantly. Didn't give him a real chance to respond. The second one, I thought the Stars had settled into that second PK really well, and I thought it was going great. And then they find a way to get it to the top, and they have three players with their sticks, all three free for the shot into DeSmith. And I just thought they had a really good night on their PK, and the Stars had a really terrible night on the other side of that.
Okay. Now we can mention the Pius Suter stuff, but so here, Pius Suter has some vague rumors from, the tweet was from Adam Kierzenblatt, who is a somewhat reputable source. He writes for the Hockey News.
Not the reputable source, I would say.
He's kind of, I don't know. I would say that's a moderately reputable source, but he's the only one talking about it, is the thing. No one else on the planet has mentioned anything about Pius Suter who knows anything about hockey. So I don't know if that's really happening, but what do y'all think?
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? Because typically if... Is it Pius or Pius? I think it's Pius Suter.
Is it Pius? I thought it was Pius.
It doesn't matter. It's a Suter. Let's say it that way. We have to have a Suter on the Stars, right? It doesn't make any sense because going the other way would have to probably be Blackwell. And you're not trading... I mean, it might be Huru or Stronges or something like that, but I doubt it for Suter. No. And obviously you're not trading Bork, Stankoven, Bischel. Those guys are not going anywhere either. And then on top of that, Blackwell kills penalties pretty well and is a perfect 13th or 14th forward for this team. And he's been really good. So why are you going out to go get Suter when you've got a perfectly good 13th, 14th forward? Well, so that doesn't make any sense to me.
I'll play devil's advocate for you, and it's because Suter's better than any of our fourth line players. He is a solid...
I don't agree.
He is the solid third line center for the Canucks. He's been, since JT Miller has left, probably their best center, actually, which is shocking because they have Elias Pettersson, but he's been terrible this year. And he's able to play those penalty kills. He has a pretty high offensive upside. And if Sagan does come back for playoff time, you're looking at a fourth line that contains probably Stankoven, Steele, and Suter, which would be an insanely high offensive potential fourth line that still has that checking capability and still has enough penalty killers on it to take you where you need to go. So.
Yeah,
It would make your forward depth absolutely insane.
And if you're planning on going all the way this year, like a bunch of players have talked about, you might need that kind of depth. Like, I mean, imagine you get to the Stanley Cup Finals and you still have a fourth line of like Steele, Stankoven, and Bork. Like, that would be stupid.
Yeah, that could be absolutely crazy. And the other thing, the thing that me and James have kind of beat the drum on as we'd approached the trade deadline here is that if you know Miro's going to be back, then your decor's solid. It's pretty good. And what has cost us in the Western Conference Finals the past two seasons? The scoring has dried up. So, yes, when you look at the team right now, you look at it, there's an obvious hole in the right side defense. That is absolutely 100% true. But then you look back at what we did last season, we had five defenders and we dominated. We looked like we could roll five defenders the entire way through. And the only thing that cost us in the end was not being able to score. And our decor's deeper than it was. Maybe not better because you don't have Tanev, but having Miro, Labushkin, CeCe on your right side, you're going to be able to play six defenders. I mean, no one's going to have 3 minutes time on ice.
The other thing was in those five was Ryan Suter. Like, right. He was playing 20 minutes a night.
Five, which is crazy.
So the other thing I was also looking at, Chris, is that this team since January 1st is scoring 3.7 goals per game.
Yes.
And on top of that, they're allowing 2.37 goals against per game. Mm-hmm. And that's just absolutely ridiculous. And right now on that pace is better than the previous two seasons.
Mm-hmm. And that's without Tyler Seguin, who was on a point per game pace before he got injured.
And on the goals against side, that's without your your best player of your team, without Miro in the lineup for the last 20 plus games, however long it's been now.
Right.
So the other thing I looked at with Vancouver, and sorry, I'll wrap it up real quick, as I was thinking maybe Suter is like a little part of the deal and maybe they're looking at one of the defensemen for Vancouver, but none of the defensemen for Vancouver right now are on an expiring deal. And none of them really make sense other than I think there was one right-handed guy that I was like, okay, maybe him, but he's got like, it's like $3 million for the next three or four seasons, according to Puckpedia. So none of that makes sense, to be completely honest.
But that's the other thing that I don't really get that Stars fans are saying a lot is like, at least get a depth right-handed defenseman. You don't need a depth right-hand defenseman. You got two of those. Labushkin and CeCe are bottom pair right-handed defensemen. We don't need another Labushkin or another CeCe. I mean, the only thing you actually need is a top pair right D guy or a second pair right D guy. And unfortunately, that guy doesn't exist for a price that the Stars are willing to pay, being so low on assets.
Well, and the other thing is that a lot of people are not considering is that as good as Harley has been, let Harley play the left side. Throw Miro on the right.
That's exactly
there's
what
your top right hand.
Miro is your right-handed defenseman. That's what it is, and he's going to be when the playoffs come around. Maybe even if you get another right-handed defenseman, he's probably still on your right side, so you can have Harley Miro be your top pair.
And then you've got Esa Labushkin. Labushkin can come in as your number four. I think that's perfectly fine. And then you've got a bottom pairing of Bischel and Dumba, who we know we hadn't really talked about, but Dumba.
Bischel and CeCe. No, not Dumba.
Dumba has played better the last several weeks.
CeCe is playing over Dumba every single time.
I agree, but like it could be Bischel, CeCe, Bischel, Dumba, Bischel, the ghost of Nils Lundqvist comes back, you know, whoever, and it would be fine.
Right. So I think that does it. And if tomorrow nothing has happened with Pius Suter, just know that we've all been bamboozled and this was all for nothing. So...
Just for us to go an extra 10 minutes, right?
Yep. So I think that does it here for us tonight, guys. Be sure to head over to DraftKings, use that promo code THPN that helps us out, and it gets you a little free goodie there. Be sure to check out our Discord. You can join our live chats during the games. We always have memes going on. Pretty active community there now. There's always something going on there, it seems like. Special thank you to our Who Cares Club members for helping us out. That's an extra membership that you can get. You get on a special channel in Discord. You get to see Ryan's post-game notes. We're going to start doing some live watch-alongs with our WCC members. All of our regular content is going to stay completely free, but that's just a way that you can help us out a little bit extra if you are so inclined to do so. And be sure to check out our website, sarcasticremarks.com, and shop sarcasticremarks.com. You can get some little merch stuff, which is another good way to help us out. Did I miss anything, Ryan?
5-star review. Click like and subscribe on YouTube. Follow us on social media. Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. The Dallas Stars win. They defeat the New Jersey Devils with a buzzer beater. Final score 4-3. Thank you, Thomas Harley. I don't really know how to throw it to myself, but I'm going to GG Boys.